Today is Saturday, the 28th of October 2023, and we are gathered here in the Zoom session for the 105th session on mindfulness for beginners in the English medium. And to our great fortune, as usual, we have Venerable Bhante Homagama Dhammakusala Thero joining the session from the representing Nissaramanaya Forest Monastery. And on behalf of all of us in the Zoom session and also through the live stream over Facebook, I would like to welcome Bhante with great respect to this program today. I would also like to welcome all of you warmly who are joining through Zoom and also through the live stream over Facebook. Now, to give an explanation on how the program will progress, it will start off with an in-session practice on mindfulness, and then we will proceed to the talk on mindfulness based on bereavement, and then we will move on to the question and answer session where written and verbal questions or statements will be presented to Bhante for his invaluable advice and guidance. So to start off things, I would like to invite Venerable Bhante to commence with the in-session practice. Over to Bhante, much merits.
Thanks, Namantha. Hello, everyone. So today we have an activity, actually a drawing activity, which is somewhat related to the topic as well. So today we'll take some time to draw something. It will be a drawing session. We can practice mindful drawing. In addition, we can see how this activity is related to the topic that we are discussing. So we'll give you some time to gather some color pens and a piece of paper. If you can use the Zoom hand to show that you are ready, then we can get started. Nadeep, you can do the explanation, right? Remaining part?
As it on the video.
Yeah.
So hopefully everyone may have watched the video. So to start with, when you have a strong feeling, kind of bereavement or otherwise some kind of sorrow in your heart, mind, you can shift that with some kind of activity. So we're going to start with painting activity. You can use different colors or single pen to make some vivid coloring picture or some shape or whatever you like. So I'm going to start with as exactly what is on the video. Let's start with, initially the presenter said, usually when you are unhappy, your mind say is a kind of a black. So I'm going to start with the brown. I couldn't find the color black. So let's start with some nice circle. Hopefully you could see. Yeah. This is my first drawing after nearly 35 years. Hopefully still my hand and fingers obeying my shaky heart. All right. And then, if you stick to that single color, which is the black, which means you are still fighting with that inner angry or bereavement or sorrows, what we do is move into the something bit brighter or which shows us what you call some little bit diluted or somewhat still bit brown. I need a green color. Change the okay. Let's go. It's brown. Sorry, green. Bit greener. Black always associated with, I guess, some sort of bad omen or bad luck, especially. And then green mostly something positive, light, positive. doesn't have to be circles itself. You can make a nice patterns or whatever make you please, just to get rid of that, not to get rid of, like deviate from that haunting thought. I might make some changes later on. Right, great.
Nandeep, yeah. If I may add something.
Yeah, definitely, Bhante.
Now the center represent grief that yes. you have in your life. Maybe a loss of loved one. So that's the grief. Usually when such things are there, we want to get rid of them. But the idea of the activity or the proper idea is to move forward with the grief. When you move forward with the grief, you might realize that different experiences gather around the grief that you're having. So the different colors represent different experiences, new experiences. Sometimes you feel joy, sometimes you feel anger, various other things happen in your life. With time, this change will come. So initially, the grief is your entire world. It represents your entire world. You feel like there's nothing beyond this grief. But when you spend more and more time, you realize different colors, different experiences are added into the same fabric or into the same paper, right? So this is our life. Although the grief is prominent initially, with time, we realize it becomes just a part of the entire picture. We are not going to get rid of it. Instead, it will become a part, maybe an important, valuable part of the painting of life. So that's the idea. So you can see Nadeep, he's adding different experiences, new experiences. The grief is still there, but now it's becoming a part of the painting. Okay, Nadeep.
Thanks, Bhante. Thanks for adding that additional comment. And what we would sometimes see is that the red usually associated with this, again, something exciting or a bit of a dangerous. Even in between that, we see some bright things happening if you are mindful. So yellow usually associated with, as I said, peace, and you might find some peace in the midst of some adventures or emergencies. Let's use some other colors. I have light blue. It's called cerulean blue. Let's see what it adds. I don't know what the blue associated with, but if you looking at the bright sunny day, it is so pleasing looking at that blue sky. So what's happening is all this excitement, emergencies turn into something more pleasing. The reason actually I use the different pattern is that it doesn't, we can't always see that it come in a certain pattern. It is combination of many things. Somewhat convoluted.
Sonali's painting is also progressing very nicely. Oh,
that's really nice, actually. I didn't see that.
You got competition now.
Actually, I've seen this similar color in Tibetan culture. They mostly use blue, red, yellow. Might be something associated with peace and happiness. Finally, there we go.
A quick message, if anyone is drawing along with Sonali and Nadeep, you can turn the video on and show your painting to the audience. Thank you.
Hi, this is mine.
Okay, beautiful. I'm done mine. So eventually, it's what if I were to say, soak into the maybe entire universe, the thought of universe. Eventually, because it's I'm trying to depict that the persona, the me, the concept of me, eventually dissolved into universe. Yeah.
Just to add to that, if you see the little black marks along the edge, that means our new experiences might also have the grief in it, but we create new experiences as we go along.
Brilliant.
Okay, everyone, thanks for doing the activity. Now, Sonali's point is very valuable. Now, that center, the dark center, that represent the grief that we initially had, maybe loss of a loved one, right? Then you can see different colors, new experiences added. Nadeep had some blue color, purple, so different experiences, joy, love, various other things happens in your life. So the painting or the fabric, it gets filled with different colors, different experiences. Then as Sonali mentioned, there could be some other experiences that bring us sorrow or grief, right? Dark colors are still there. So it's okay to have them. That's the entire idea of the activity. Apart from being mindful while drawing, it's okay to have these dark patches. They become an essential part of the drawing, right? You should not only have the bright colors, positive colors, but instead, these dark patches, they become an essential part of the entire drawing. So that's the idea. If anybody else would like to add something, we can take some time. Nadeep, anything else to add?
Just one thing, even though nowadays I don't have, you know, such kind of any sorrow or anything, but as soon as I start this drawing, I feel a bit, I was filled with a bit of excitement. So I observe that, and then I pay my attention to the initial task given. So it's slowly and gradually that excitement went away, and I was able to fully focus onto the task at hand.
Yeah, thank you for being excited and accepting this challenge on a short notice. I gave you guys probably like few hours only. So,
that's all right.
Found this out during the last few hours, that's why. Yeah. Okay, thank you. This was motivated by a YouTube video. Maybe Namantha can share it in the description so everybody else can also view it. I think Samantha has something to add.
Thanks, Bhante. I was just wondering whether, I'm not sure whether Bhante is going to give a talk on this in a minute, whether I can ask for it now. So at the beginning, So the pain is dark and obviously raw. So as life moves on and you, it says that you experience and joy and, you know, eventually, but you still have the pain, the deep pain there. So I'm just wondering, you don't become happy or accept automatically. There has to be some sort of, is there an effort that you have to make mindfully to obviously accept the situation so that you don't, you know, spiral down negatively into a depression? So do you have to constantly make an effort to do wholesome activities, actions, and be positive and that sort of thing, whilst being mindful, and obviously learning the Dhamma would help, or the points of the Dhamma. Yeah, so to become happier. That's what I was just wondering, because you won't just become happy. Time won't just heal just like that. You have to sort of like make an effort to do something wholesome. Would I be correct in saying that, Bhante?
Yeah, thank you for adding the question. We'll have a discussion on it during the talk, and maybe afterwards we can discuss even further, right? So I'll try to add something regarding this point during the talk.
Okay, thank you.
Bhante,
can I ask one question, please, Bhante? My drawing is very small, and does it signify anything? Because
maybe it signifies that you were in a rush. We didn't give you enough time to get prepared. Yeah.
Okay.
That's fine. Thank you for participating, because we only had a few minutes to get prepared, gather the stuff. So that's fine. You can do a much better one later.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. Thank you to all.
Naman, do you have anything to add?
No, I mean, maybe Hiranti, if she can explain what she drew in the painting, like any ideas that crossed her mind?
Well, I had the thought of the sad event, and then how it mitigates, how it slows down as time goes on. That's the way I took this drawing. As time goes on, the sorrow or the anger or grief, they all lessen. And eventually, if the person or the scenario gets lessened and reduced, then you tend to forget it as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Hiranti.
And brighter, brighter. That's my thought. Is that right, Bhante? Is that the way it works?
Yeah, thank you for sharing. We'll have a discussion and see how it goes. Now, Bhante, I think you can take over.
Okay, Bhante, thank you. And thank you for guiding through that in-session practice. And also thank you for the wonderful participation from Nadeep, Sonali and Hiranti. Now we will move on to the talk on the topic for today, which is bereavement. And I would like to invite Bhante again to commence the talk for today based on the topic of bereavement, a continuation from last week's topic as Chapter 2 for today's session. Over to Bhante again. Thank you.
Thanks, Namantha. Hello, everybody. So we are going to have a discussion regarding the same topic. It's a continuation from last week. So when we live our life, we have close friends, family in our life, right? So it's natural that eventually we have to face a loss of them. Maybe they part due to some other matter. Maybe they part due to their death, right? So when we think about it, I have a shocking announcement for you that everybody you love has a 100% chance of dying, right? So anyway, whoever that's in your life, you have to get separated from them, either their death or yours, right? So that's how the life is. So when we part from these people that we love, it's natural that we feel grief in our mind. When you truly think about this grief, in a way, there is a vacuum created in you because of this loss. This person was filling a certain space in your life or certain space in your mind. When they die, it's natural that you start to feel this vacuum in you. Based on this vacuum, if it is a large portion, then you might feel a great grief in you. If it is a smaller portion, then of course you might feel some grief. If it is a distant person to you, you may think about it for a few minutes, maybe 1 hour, then you may forget about it, right? So this is how we are. The greater the vacuum they create in us, the greater the grief will be. And we'll be crying, we'll be thinking about them a lot, right? We'll try to remember how we spend time with them. So this is how we react. In a way, it is a loss to you. That's why you are crying. In a way, it creates a hole or a vacuum in you. That's why you are crying. Maybe they were there for you when you needed them. They were comforting. They did certain things for you, right? So all these things add up to your grief. That's why when you lose someone, you always say these things. Okay, I probably will say like, I lost my mother. She took care of me. She did these things for me. Something like that you'll say. So in a way, you are grieving the vacuum that's created within you. You are grieving the loss that you had in your mind, right? So that's how we are. That's how we are. Again and again, the grief is created because we have a space, we have a vacuum created due to the loss of this person. And we are crying, we are complaining, we try to deny various things we do. Sometimes you might spiral down into a depression, thinking about this person all the time, due to the vacuum that's created due to this loss, right? So this is how we are. This is what grief is. You are not crying for them. Actually, you are crying for yourself. You are not crying because they parted. Actually, you are crying because there's a space or a vacuum created within you, right? You might say that, no, I am truly sorrowful. I am crying for them. You might say, I am truly thinking about them. That might be partially true, but actually when you really think about it or when you really be conscious about this grieving process, you might realize, I am crying for myself. I'm not crying for somebody else. I'm crying for myself. I'm crying for my loss. I'm crying for the space or the vacuum created by this loss. That's the reality. That's the truth, right? So the world we live in this new world, naturally, the idea is we shouldn't have grief in our life. We shouldn't have negative feelings in our life. We shouldn't be crying, right? So that's what advertised in this new world. If you watch TV, if you go on internet, right, if you talk to other people, always you see smiling faces. They are happy. They are joyful, right? If a family is happy, they should be like this. If a family is happy, they should go on vacation every year. Something like that. This big idea is there. they are truly advertising, right? They are doing various advertising in order to promote various things. So that's what advertised in this world, joy, happiness, right? These things are advertised, but they say that you shouldn't be feeling these things. You shouldn't be sorrowful. You shouldn't have grief in you. You shouldn't cry in front of people. That's how the society tells us. But when we truly think about it, this is a relatively new idea. This is relatively new idea that you should only have positivity in your life. That's a relatively new idea. Ancient wisdom contains something valuable for us to listen. What is that? Ancient wisdom says that it is okay to have negative things in your life. Everybody you love, they'll eventually die. They have a 100% chance of dying. So if that is the case, how can you not feel grief in you? How can you not be sorrowful during certain times? So the ancient wisdom, it says us that it is okay to have these feelings. It is actually more like human to have this feeling. If you are human, you might experience grief. If you are human, you might experience loss of loved ones. If you are human, you might experience sorrow in your life, right? We have to accept that first. That is important. These darker colors are there in our life. That acceptance is important, right? Otherwise, we say that I am always happy. I don't have grief in my life. You are trying to tell it to other people. But what I am saying is that it's okay to tell them that I am sad today. It's okay to tell them that I have this sorrow in me. It's okay to tell them that I am grieving loss of the loved one. Right? So that's fine. You should only feel the positive ones. You should only have the positive ones. Instead, it is okay to cry. It is okay to feel sorrow. It is okay to feel grief in you. That is the reality. That is the truth. Right? So that's the very first idea. Don't think that you shouldn't be feeling these things. Don't think that you aren't fortunate to have these things in your life. It's not true. Everybody has these things in their life. Maybe they are acting better than you. They are good actors, right? That's why they act like nothing happened. That's why they are in denial. That's why they are always showing a happy face in front of a crowd. But that's not actually true. They have grief in them. They have sorrow. They are just acting, right? So don't be an actor. Instead, face the reality, understand that these things are essential part of our life. Imagine that drawing, think about that drawing. The darker colors, it becomes an essential part. Not just a part, but an essential part. And it will bring us a lot of teachings, lessons. Right? It will teach us a lot, probably much more than the brighter colors. Because during this grieving process, you might realize how attached you are to certain people. How attached you are to certain things, right? So that realization brings you much deeper insight into life. Probably much deeper insight than the happy faces. Now, I know this person. She was having some health issues probably a month ago or so, and they suspected it's a cancer or something, right? Extreme pain in the belly, something like that, right? So initially, this person is well aware about mindfulness, an essential part of the Satipatthana team, and doing a lot of activities and stuff. So this person was saying, during this phase, I felt this extreme grief in me. This pain was unbearable. I was always thinking about my children, how I have to leave them at a young age. Right? So this is the thought process that she was having for weeks, and that suffering was extreme. One side you have the physical pain, on the other side you have this emotional pain. Now I have to part from my little children. How would they survive in this world? Right? So that thought process is there. Addition to the physical pain, this thought process is creating extreme suffering. So after a few weeks of experience, she's coming out of it. She's becoming better and sharing her experience. She's saying that I thought that I had no attachment toward these things. But now I know, although I thought like that, but now I know I had this extreme attachment towards my kid. Right? She was telling that earlier, she was telling that I have little attachment. I do their thing, I'm not so much attached to them, something like that. But this grieving period, it taught her that she had extreme attachment towards her little children, and that's what was in her head all the time. Then she was telling that death is not easy, right? When you imagine about it, when you talk about it, we talk about it very lightly, and we say that, okay, I'll face this way. This is how the death will approach. I'll face it like this. I'll say goodbye to, you know, my family and friends, something like that. But when the reality hits you, she's saying it's really difficult. Death is not easy, right? Just from this experience, right? She's sharing. Then something funny, in addition, some additional comment about mindful activities. She's saying that I know like 1,000 activities about mindfulness practice, but when I am in extreme pain, when I am in extreme grief, these practices are useless. She's saying that we can't do these small tricks and practices during this extreme pain or the grief. So just from that few weeks of extreme grief, these were her insights. So think about it, if that illness didn't come her way, she would know these things. She would still say that I have little attachment towards my children. And death, I'll face this way. And she'll recommend to other people, these are the mindful activities you can use to fight grief, right? So that's how these darker patches, they will teach us. It's a difficult lesson, of course, that's true. It's not easy, it's a difficult lesson, but it will teach us a lot, right? So that's how we have to face these things. Take them on as a meditation. Don't think that they shouldn't be a part of your life. Don't try to suppress them. Don't try to deny them. Instead, just accept and see what's the lesson this grief is bringing you. Right? That's the idea. Now, in our activity today, we started with this grief. Dark patch in the middle of the drawing, right? So when you start, you only feel the grief. You only feel the grief. You feel that it is your entire world. There is no going beyond this grief, right? You feel this extreme pain within you. But when the time passes, new experiences are added into your life. Although during this grieving period, you feel really bad for a while, maybe for a few days, maybe for a few weeks, you feel this extreme level of suffering, pain within you. But when the time passes, maybe within few weeks, few months, you realize, although the grief is still a large part of my life, I have additional experiences apart from that grief. Maybe once in a while I experience happiness. Maybe once in a while I experience love. Maybe once in a while I experience some other emotion. Maybe once in a while I forget about my grief. I'm occupied with something else. So you can see how the various different colors are added onto the same fabric. Still that dark patches there are. Still it's a large portion, but different colors, different patterns are added onto the same fabric. That's how the time is doing its magic. That's how the time will change this grieving process. Initially, you feel like this is unbearable. Initially, it is true. But you have to be assured that with time, it will get much better. With time, you'll recover from this. With time, this becomes a lesson for you. Right? So that way, if you take the approach, then maybe within few weeks, within few months, you realize, although the grief is still there, I'm having other experiences as well. I'm having moments of joy. I'm having moments of relaxation. Sometimes I even forget my grief. So that way, various colors, various patterns are added onto the same fabric. Maybe when you pass years, few more incidents might come into this same painting. Few more dark patches might come into the same painting. As Sonali pointed out, more dark patches are there. Maybe due to the same trigger, the initial trigger, or maybe due to some new incidents. Loss is there, grief is there, right? But when you complete the full drawing, you realize these dark patches are an essential part of this drawing. This drawing becomes beautiful due to these dark patches. This drawing becomes human due to these dark patches. That's the real idea about grief. Not just you shouldn't be feeling them. Not just that you shouldn't get rid of this dark patch. That's not how it is. Most people, they talk about moving on from this grief. That's the idea. We shouldn't be moving on. We shouldn't be forgetting about this. We shouldn't be getting rid of this. But that's not true. Instead, you should be moving forward with it. That's what the drawing did. It had the dark patch, but it moved forward with it. When you move forward, you realize the drawing is beautiful with these dark patches. The drawing is perfect with these imperfections. Right? So that's the idea. That's the proper way. You are having these incidents in your life, but you face them with courage. You know that there is grief in your life, but you face them with courage. That's the idea. Now, when it comes to the mindfulness practice, some people say that when you are mindful, you shouldn't be feeling negative things. Most people, they meditate just because they want to get rid of the negativity in their life. They think when we meditate, we shouldn't be feeling grief. When we meditate, we should always be happy. on the internet, you can find happy and relaxed faces of the meditating people, right? So that's what advertised on web. Meditators are always happy. Meditators have bliss on their faces. But actually, when we meditate, when we become more and more human, that's the true idea of meditation. We plug into the reality. Reality might not be pleasant, but that's okay. That's okay because it's your reality. You shouldn't be suppressing it. You shouldn't be forgetting it. If you suppress, if you deny your reality, that is the real cause of mental illness in this world. Suppression, denial of this reality. You act like there is nothing here. You act like there is no sorrow in you or grief in you. You try to smile in front of a crowd. You try to act. What is the result? You will be sick, mentally ill. So this is the root cause of all mental illness. You deny your own reality. But when we meditate, the idea is to accept your reality. It might not be pleasant. Sometimes you feel this extreme grief in you when you are mindful. When you sit comfortably, even physical manifestations of the grief is there. But that's okay. Gradually you develop the ability to accept it. Gradually you develop the ability to face this reality. When you have that strength, when you develop that strength, with time you realize you become much better accepting this reality. Sometimes you are sorrowful. Sometimes you cry. But that's okay. That is your reality. You develop this courage to accept it. That is the mindfulness. We are not judging the reality. No judgment should be there. Initially, a lot of judgments are there. We say this shouldn't be coming in my meditation. I shouldn't feel these things in my meditation. That's how you start. But when you meditate again and again, when you spend a lot of time in your meditation, then you realize with time, you become much better accepting the reality. You are not judging it. You are not suppressing it. So that's the true idea of meditation. The meditators, they are becoming better at accepting their reality. When the sorrow is there, they don't pretend. They don't act. Instead, they know that the sorrow is there. When the grief is there, they don't pretend. They don't act. They know that the grief is there. When they make mistakes, they don't pretend. They don't act. They know that they have made mistakes. That is the human nature that we are talking about. That is the true meditation that we are talking about. You become better at it, better at accepting the reality. And when that happens, you realize incremental levels of peace within you. Why? Because you are not suppressing anymore. Why? Because you are not fighting this anymore. Fighting the reality, it's not a fight that you can win. Sooner or later, you will lose that fight. Right? So when we meditate, we try to accept our own reality. It might not be pleasant at the moment, but that's fine. I accept it. My mind is having this grief in it. That's fine. I accept it. If you deny it, then you might spiral down into a depression. If you fight it, if you suppress it, then you might spiral down into a mental illness. So you are developing this strength in your mind to accept these things. Now, when we are not ill, when we are not sick, when we are not grieving, we try to start our mindfulness practice. Don't wait till the last minute to start your practice. When you are healthy, you have to start. When you are not feeling grief, you have to start. Before you lose your loved ones, you have to start. Right? That is how you start your practice. And when you continue with your practice, time to time, grief might come. Time to time, you might fall ill. Time to time, you may face difficulties. And they do become part of your meditation. But you can't wait till the troubles come to meditate. You have to meditate before. You have to start your practice before. You have to do your homework. You have to be prepared. And when you are prepared, when the troubles come, it becomes fuel to your own meditation. It becomes a part of your own meditation. That's how we should be approaching this practice, right? Gradually you start your practice when you are healthy. Gradually you start your practice when you don't feel this extreme grief. Gradually you start your practice when you don't have difficulties, much troubles in your life. That practice will one day help you when you're experiencing grief. That practice will one day help you when you are fighting an illness. Right? So that's the true idea. Now, when we are healthy, we can do something about our mind. What can we do? The mindfulness practice, we are trying to bring our attention to the present moment. That training we have, that's our responsibility. We try to be present more and more. That is our meditation. That is our practice. You can do it when you are healthy. You have to do it repetitively till it becomes, till it comes naturally to you. We say muscle memory. That doesn't mean muscles contain memory. Instead, you train your circuits again and again till they come natural to you. That's the idea of meditation, right? So when you trained your mind to be present again and again, maybe for weeks, maybe for months, maybe for years, when you train like that, right? So that becomes the natural state of your mind. You are naturally more present. Your mind is naturally more present, right? So when illnesses come, if this is your natural state, right, you might not create so much grief because your mind is naturally present. It comes to the present moment more and more. When the grief comes, if the mind is naturally present, then you might feel that grief. You might face that grief much better, right? So that is the idea of meditation. You train your mind to be naturally present with repetitive practice, and that present state, that present mind will help you to face illnesses. That present mind will help you to face grief in you. Otherwise, when you are ill, you can't say that my mindfulness practice doesn't work. Because you haven't trained enough. That's why your mind is wandering so much about the illness. That's why it's creating so much suffering within you about the illness. That's why you are having so much trouble with the grief. It is creating so much suffering in you because your mind is not naturally present. Because you haven't trained your mind enough. So that's the idea of the practice. Don't wait till you are sick to practice. That doesn't gonna work. Instead, you practice when you are healthy. That very practice will help you when you are sick. Don't wait till you lose a loved one to meditate. Meditate when you are comfortable. And when you lose somebody, that very meditation will help you. So during these difficult situations, the meditation shouldn't be intentional. That is the idea. Intentionally, you can't meditate during these periods, right? Because you are feeling extreme grief in you. That's why that the person is saying that the activities doesn't work. That's true. Because you are intentionally trying to meditate during this grief. That's not the correct practice. You meditate beforehand. you come prepared. When the grief hits you, your mind will take care of it, not you. That's why we say the practice should sustain on its own. Now, a beginner, they are helping their own practice. They are sustaining their own practice. That is how you start. But when you continue for months, years, then the practice will sustain itself. That practice will help you to face grief. That practice will help you to face illnesses. That is the true idea of mindfulness. Otherwise, you wait till some trouble comes and then you tell us that the mindfulness doesn't work. That I have 1,000 activities but doesn't work. That's true because you are too late. You have to practice beforehand. You have to encourage the practice. You have to strengthen the practice. So the practice is able to sustain itself. You are not maintaining your practice. It is maintained by itself. When you have that level of practice, that practice will take care of your illness. That practice will take care of your grief. That is the true idea of the meditation. Otherwise, it's natural that you can't do these silly activities during a grieving period. You can't do these different activities when you are extremely ill. Try and see when you are extremely ill, how much trouble you feel, how this mind works. You have to experience on your own. I remember maybe like 2 years ago, I have by that even maybe like 4 years ago, by that time I have practiced for like 3 or so years. I was sick for like 3 or 4 weeks continuously. The same sickness, it has different phases. So I remember, although I was talking about mindfulness a lot, during this ill period, during this sick period, nothing worked. I had extreme pain in my body. Then the mind was all around the place. So I could feel that now, intentionally, I can't do anything. Intentionally, I can't practice because I'm in hell. I have this extreme illness in my body. The mind is all over the place. When you are feverish, you can't control your mind, right? Sometimes it goes on these never-ending loops. The same thoughts are repeated 1,001 times, right? So you can't control this process. You lose the control. That's what sickness is, right? So when you are sick for weeks with an extreme illness, then you realize it's out of control. The mind is out of control. Now is not a time to sustain. Now it's not a time to practice mindfulness. And so the practice should come and help you, not the other way around. Not you should go and help the practice. That's not how it works. During these difficulties, the practice may come and help you if you have practiced enough. Right? So that's the idea I want to give today. Thank you for listening.
Thank you very much, Bhante, and much merit for very detailed advice on tackling a topic that is relevant to all of us, the sharp pain of bereavement. Now, I would like to move on to the question and answer session, and I would like to invite Samantha to read out the reports for today, and I will share the screen for the introduction to beginners. If you can go through it quickly, Samantha, that will be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Namantha. Avasarai Bhante, thank you for that really valuable guidance and topic. It really helped me a lot, which I'll take on board as well. Anyway, just hello everyone. We've got two reports, Bhante, one from via email and one from Google. Before I go on to read the reports, I'll just remind everyone, especially for any newcomers to the program, the basic guidance that Namantha has actually just put in the chat. It shows all the guidance on how to meditate, and submit your experiences in a report format to Bhante. This is really would be helpful guidance, and Bhante will give advice on how to progress in your meditation, and that will be really valuable. And as you can see, there are also two helpful video links put together by Nisarana Vanaya on both mindful walking and mindful sitting, so that there's good guidance on how to do the meditation. And you can allocate some time for the practice daily. They recommend starting with walking meditation and then do sitting meditation, gradually building up from, say, initially half an hour and eventually up to 2 hours per day to progress. Then you can please submit your experiences in writing, both mindfully in mindful walking and mindful sitting, to Bhante. And there's an example in the chat how to do this. You can do this via email or via Google form. And an example of this is if you're walking, you can describe any prominent example in your meditation, any prominent sensations, texture of the ground, pressure points of the soles, and how, say, the body weight shifted, experience of that. And similarly, in sitting meditation, again, you can refer to any prominent sensations, incoming sensations of the breath and outgoing, and where you felt it at the, say, example, at the nostrils or at rising and falling of the abdomen, etc. And you can also write your mindful experiences on daily activities during the day, how you were mindful basically during the day, and how you experienced each moment as you carried on with your daily activities. Then in the session, Bhante will give valuable guidance for your own practice and how to progress in your meditation. And this is really helpful for you to benefit and carry on in your meditation. You can send your reports either, as I explained earlier, in Google form, in the link. You can see the links in the chat Narmanta has put just now, or by email. So please make use of this good opportunity to get personal guidance from Bhante, and you can continue with your own mindfulness practice during the week, according to the advice given for your own report that Bhante will give specific guidance advice during the session when you submit your reports. Finally, the recordings of the session are available in the link given in the chat if you want to go and revisit any of the talks. Now I'll go on to this week's reports. Bhante, the first one is the first report we've got on walking meditation. Walked indoors with socks on the tiled floor. Noted hardness, warmth on parts of floor, tickling sensation between toes at times. Socks on toes, loose in some areas, tighter in others. Initial placing of right and left feet. After noticing weight, more on one foot than other when standing at the start and when turning. Discomfort in chest, back warmth of sun on parts of body, thoughts with some proliferation all noted to arise and pass. mind naturally going to feet, and nothing, and noting the start and end of each placing, moving and lifting. Felt sleepy at times, but aware that this happens when mind is getting more concentrated, so persisted walking. Walked for 45 minutes. During the sitting meditation, after the walking, sat on a cushion with legs crossed, hands on lap, eyes closed, mind aware sitting posture, breath on and off. Wanted to get up after a short time, but persisted sitting. Noted breath, very subtle. Mind mostly noting thoughts that were short with occasional proliferation. A family member spoke and noted disappointment, not wanting me to join him to go out. Mind then noted to seeing the advantage of being able to continue with the meditation by not going out. Mind was happy and peaceful. Meditated for 30 minutes. Then mindfulness during the day. On a long drive and a delay of an hour due to accident, noted the mind, wishing those in the accident be well, happy, and have the courage and determination to face the difficulties they would have from the accident. Noted patience whilst waiting for the traffic to clear. Despite having to get back in time for a game of badminton, which I did, albeit slightly late, and lack of agitation, was able to complete the other jobs afterwards and noted no tiredness despite the very busy day before the drive. However, aware of great impatience and lack of tolerance with family member, although mind aware at times, noting how impatience arises and passes, at other times, irritation and annoyance prominent. Noted disappointment when this happens soon after and make yet another determination to note how that too arises and passes quickly. With much merit and gratitude to Bhante and organizers. That's the end of the report, Bhante. The first report.
Okay, thanks for sharing. Now, when we think about a beginner, when they write their experience like this, right, you can see a story in that experience. Right? Let's say the walking experience, they have a story from the beginning to the end. Let's say a sitting session, they have the story from the beginning to the end. That is how we start. Our mind is always creating a story out of things. And that story is what we are sharing, right? Probably you are not the actual experience. Instead, you share that mind-made story, right? That's fine. That's how we start, right? But now when we listen to this report, the one that is just shared, you can see fragments are there, right? Instead of the whole picture, you see fragments of it. Instead of a whole story, you see sentences of that story, right? So you see like there are certain observations like chest, difficulty in chest, some kind of a discomfort, then warmth on your back. Right, then one leg taking more weight, short thoughts, occasional proliferation, right? So these things are more like fragments. There's no whole story in this report, right? So that is a good sign. That's a sign that our meditation is progressing. Usually it is our own mind that is creating the story. Otherwise, what we all experience, they are just fragments. They are just fragments. Out of these fragments, we create a story. That story is an illusion. That is a mind-made story. That's why people talk about the past. They say, "Ah, these things happened to me. This is me when I was little." They might show you pictures even, right? So that's how the people talk about the past. But actually, when you think about the reality, it is experienced in the present moment, only in the present moment. That there is nothing beyond. The idea of time or the psychological time, it's an illusion. It is mind-made. It is mind-made. Out of these fragments, you create a story. Your mind creates a story, right? So when we meditate, the meditators, they start with a story. They write long stories about their meditation. Again and again, we have to tell them, come to the breath. Notice the steps. That way we have to advise them. But when they progress in their practice, the story becomes a collection of fragments. Now this report is a good example. Certain fragments are there. But we are not trying to express any idea. We are not trying to tell any story. Instead, this is the reality. One moment you feel that one leg is taking more weight. Other one is just dragging. Next moment you feel that there is a discomfort in your chest. Next moment you feel warmth on your back. Next moment you feel short thought. Right? So this is how it is. These fragments, that's our reality. Or this is a Lego set. Right? Out of these Legos, we create a car, we create a building, we create some other thing, and we tell the world, look at the car I created. Look at the building I created. Look at this beautiful scenery I created. Illusion, that's what it is. Instead, the reality is always these Legos. These Legos. The meditator, they come to the root. The root is Legos. Right? Those are the fragments. Time to time, our mind habitually goes on creating a story out of these fragments. That's fine. Again, we continue with our meditation. Again, it becomes fragments. No story. Again, a story is created. Again, it becomes fragments, right? So when it comes to the fragments, there is no sorrow in them. There is no suffering in them. But when it comes to the story, maybe it's a happy ending. Maybe it is a sad ending. Maybe it's a dreadful story. So the happiness is created. Sorrow is created. Fear is created out of the story. But the original root, you have no fear, no happiness, no sorrow in it. So that's what we do as meditators. We start with the story, we go to the root. When we go to the root, we find nothing but the fragments. Then the world might come and tell you, come, we'll create a fresh story. The family members might come and invite you for something. Right? That's what it is. The world wants you to create a story out of this. That's how it is. But you know that there is no point in creating a story. Once in a while you do, but you know that there is no point. But you do it for the sake of your family members, for the sake of others. You do. You know that there is no point, but you do it. You still do it for the sake of others. Right? You create something, still you know there is no real value. The root is these fragments, these Legos. Right? So that's how it is. That's the true practice. That's why you don't feel this tiredness in you. You do so many things, 101 things in a day. But you don't feel tiredness, because in these fragments, you have no tiredness. If you create a story, of course, then the sorrow appears, tiredness appears, stress appears, tension appears. That's how it is. But when it comes to the reality, the mindful experience, these fragments are there. Sometimes it's a disturbing thought. Sometimes it is impatience. Sometimes it is anger. These are just fragments. These are just fragments. Our mind tries to create something out of it. But the meditator, they again and again comes to the root. When they come to the root, it's just fragments. There is no real essence. There is no real story. That's why you say, this too shall pass. This fragment also shall pass eventually. We shouldn't be creating any story out of this, right? So this is the true practice. You start with a story, even in your own meditation experience or the reports, we can see you start with a story and gradually becomes debris, it becomes just fragments of it, right? So that's how it is. That's the progress that we see. Even you can feel your own transformation. You can feel how you have created stories in the history. You can feel how now you are not empowering that process, or you are not energizing that process. The fragments come, the fragments go. This too shall pass. That's the true idea. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you, Bhante, for that. So we have the second and the last report that was received by Google. It's on general mindfulness. During a trip to the seaside, observed long gaps of silences in the mind. During these silences, it was easier to observe changes in mental states and decide how to react or not to react at all to various things and conversations. On two separate occasions, observed the self and non-self view of the same emotion. Family member getting ready to go on a long-term meditation retreat was caught up in emotions, blaming them for leaving, and cried whilst being aware it was such a useless thing to do. Observed how the mind got carried away with the emotion, the lack of energy, and body feeling very tired after the episode. Identified this as the self-view afterwards and felt embarrassed for reacting like this, but forgave immediately. On another occasion, when the same strong emotion came again, sat and observed the emotion until it disappeared, and mind turned into peacefulness once more, and back to the thoughtless state. Noticed how energetic it felt afterwards. Your words last time, save yourself, you can't save everyone, has strongly stayed in the mind. I'm feeling from own mistakes, Bhante. Thank you so much for your guidance. Much merits to you. That's the end of the report, Bhante.
Okay, so those long gaps of silence, right? So that's the fabric of life. Then on this fabric, different things appear. Sometime back, we gave the analogy of a screen versus the movie, right? The screen is always there, but usually it doesn't grab our attention. The motion picture, it grabs our attention. So when you meditate for some time, you start to see this fabric. That's why you are noticing these long gaps of silence. That is the fabric of this life. If you are not a meditator, you won't be appreciating this. That's why majority of the people, They want something to fill this gap. They don't like this gap. They hate it. They hate it. They don't like quiet time. They don't like to be with themselves. They need a crowd. They need noise. They need singing. All these things are needed because this gap is not appreciated. But this is the fabric of our existence. And on this fabric, various things appear. Various things appear. Time to time, different thoughts, some emotions. Time to time, you feel sorrow. You feel fear. Sometimes you cry. So all these things are natural to you. That's how it is. As practitioners, we say it is okay to feel them. It is okay to feel them because you know that there is a greater truth behind this emotion. You know that there is a greater truth behind this thought. That is the fabric. That is the silence. That is the gap that you are experiencing. So when you know this gap, then the fragment, the things that appear on this fabric, they don't matter anymore. At least we are not assigning so much value to them, right? Still these things appear, still you feel sorrowful, still you feel like crying, but we are not assigning so much value to these things because we know a greater truth. That is the fabric of life. That is the fabric behind this thing that's appearing. That's why you say sometimes you cry. Same incident, sometimes you can face it differently. When you cry, you feel tired, you feel lack of energy. When you face it in a different way, when you meditate, you feel peace within. Right? So the approach, it matters. If you give power to the things that are appearing, then of course you feel lack of energy. Of course you feel this sorrow. Of course it takes time for you to recover. But when you approach it differently, when you approach it in the point of view of meditation, you realize you end in peace. You end in peace. That doesn't mean that we will always accept it like that. No. Again and again, we sometimes get carried away. What I am saying is, it is okay to get carried away. It is human to get carried away. Otherwise, meditators, they are after perfection. They think that I shouldn't get carried away at all. I should always be mindful 100% of the time. No, that is not true. That is not how it works. Instead, the meditators, they know that sometimes they get carried away. The meditators, they know that sometimes they are unmindful. That very knowing will help you. That very knowing will save you, right? So next time also you might get carried away. But assure yourself that it is okay to get carried away. Sometimes you feel, face it positively. With the help of the meditation, you face it. That's also fine, right? So that's how we have to continue with our practice. Don't try to make it perfect. That's not humanly possible. Instead, we know that sometimes we are unmindful. We know that sometimes we are getting carried away. In a way, the light or the enlightenment is that we know the sheer scale of ignorance. Becoming aware of the sheer scale of ignorance, that is enlightenment. Right? Not spreading light everywhere. Instead, we know the sheer scale of darkness. There was this very nice representation about this, of this idea. A huge space of darkness. In the middle of it, there is a candle. in the huge space of darkness, in the middle, you have small light. So the idea is that the light, you know the sheer scale of darkness. That's the very idea of enlightenment. You shouldn't be lighting the entire space. Instead, you know that this is the lit area, this is small, and the dark is so vast, darkness is so vast. That very knowing is the idea. That very knowing is the idea, knowing the sheer scale of ignorance, knowing the sheer scale of darkness. That very knowing, we call it enlightenment. Right, so that's the idea. Don't try to make it perfect. Next time also you will get carried away. Right? Be assured that you'll get carried away. When that comes, the shock will be much less because now you know that this is the reality. Now you don't have expectations to be perfect all the time. Instead, we know that we are human. Instead, we know that we get carried away. And so we know that we feel these things. That's fine. That is how we have to face. That's the proper idea of the practice. So thank you for sharing, and you may continue this way.
Thank you, Bhante, for your valuable advice. That was the last question. So now we'll just move on to the party, if any of the participants want to ask any questions on the Dhamma talk or even on their practice, if you would like to unmute, raise your hand and unmute on Zoom. If you have any questions, don't at the moment. Don't.
No question. That means we can finish on time. Actually, we are past our time.
Oh, yeah. Can I, Bhante, quickly ask a burning question?
Yeah, if you have one, go ahead.
Just until we get someone, just a quick one. I was just thinking, it was very interesting in the talk, Bhante, about the loss of someone, why I am grieving. I can see that because of attachment to that person. But again, and Bhante mentioned about being self, because I'm selfish as well, because there's a self, because that person has given me something to help me during my years and whatever in the family members. So I'm gratitude grateful. So that loss I'm feeding to my selfish reason. But however, I have metta to that person, genuine metta to that person. And because of that, I have the attachment. And then I was thinking of it from another point of view. If I didn't get any help or anything from that person, no matter how close they are, then maybe that loss wouldn't be there. So then I can see that's conditional. So would it be best if I have, how can I develop unconditional love to the family members? Would that be the best way to approach this? Because I feel that my grief is conditioned because of that attachment to that person. And that's what I would... would that be a good idea? How to develop unconditional?
Yes, so unconditional love, it's a popular term nowadays, right? So when it comes to unconditional love, the parents are taken as an example. Parents, they always have a good heart about their child and try to do best for them, right? But actually, when you think about parenthood, parents impose ideas, their own ideas, things that they have missed into their children, right? So although parents try to do good for you, they always have some selfish motives. It's like if the child grows up to be a good person, then the world will be appreciating the parenthood. Right, so certain things are there, so I won't go deep into them, but the basic idea is that our motives are always selfish. How can we express unconditional love with a conditioned mind? That's the question that we have to ask, because our mind is conditioned, as you clearly mentioned, right? So we can't express unconditional love. Unconditional love is humanly not possible, right? But parents are somewhat closer, right? Parents, their care for a child, that's somewhat close, but still it is conditioned. It has selfish motives. Even the parents, when the children grow up, you start experiencing this huge friction. Why? Because the children are changing. They are adolescents. They are changing. When they change, you start to feel this friction, extreme friction between the parents and the child, because now the child is not meeting their expectations. Right? You see how the selfishness is there. If they truly care for the child, they should allow him or her to be whatever they want. But that's not possible. That's not how it works. Right? So this friction, it's a great sign. Adolescents and their parents, it's a great sign that there is always selfish motives. Right? But parents are somewhat close to unconditional love. We can't have unconditional love with a conditioned mind. That's the issue. That's the idea. So if you want to have unconditional love in your life, you should meditate more and more. Meditation will get rid of the attachment. Attachment is the source of all these things. If you have no attachment, then of course you have unconditional love within you. That's the way to get unconditional love. So there is no this attachment to a certain object or to a certain person. The great example is water, right? Whatever you put in the water doesn't complain. You can spread perfume in it, it doesn't complain. You can spread shit in it doesn't complain, right? So that's the unconditional nature. Right, not conditioned. Whatever it goes along with it. Right, so that's not humanly possible unless you when you have attachment in your mind. Right, if you want unconditional, if you want to get closer, what you have to do is meditate. Meditation will allow us to go beyond the conditioned mind. When you go beyond the conditioned mind, that is the unconditional nature. But it is not selfish. Right, you don't have this attachment. Nowadays, when we experience certain things, what we experience is attachment. Right, that's why we are happy when they are here. That's why we feel sad when they are not here. Right, so always conditioned. This is the conditioned mind. This is the conditioned nature. Right. So if you want to get closer to unconditional, you have to meditate. Meditation will let go of the attachment within you. When you let go of the attachment, then that's how you can get closer, right? So try and meditate more and more. When you do
Definitely.
It,
yeah.
You'll start to feel more and more unconditional love.
Thank you, Bhante. Sadhu. That really makes sense. Yeah, I got my answer. Sadhu, Bhante. Sadhu.
Okay, I think with that we can finish today's session. Namanta?
Yes, Bhante. Yes, thank you. Thank you, Samantha, and much thanks to you, and also much thanks to Bhante. And thank you, Bhante. We will wrap up the program for today based on the time period being exceeded as well. I would like to associate accumulated merits with Venerable Bhante Homa Gamadhamma Kusala Thero for joining us in today's session and imparting with a lot of insightful guidance and advice on mindfulness in this manner. Much best to you, Bhante, and we hope these merits will have a positive impact on Bhante's own practices, and that Bhante's own practice will keep on flourishing. Furthermore, we would like to associate merits with the Most Honorable Bhante Udayirigam Dhammajiva Mahathero, the chief abbot of the Nisaramanaya Forest Monastery, and we hope that Chief Bhante's own practices will improve and he will have good and strong health and happiness in the path. And also, I would like to wish these merits to be shared with the wonderful set of organizers in this program. I wish that these positive merits will have great impact on their own practices, and that they will also flourish in their mindfulness journeys. And also, I would like to thank and wish these merits on upon all the participants who have been participating in our program in today's session as well as in earlier sessions. And we hope that these merits will have a great impact on your own practices, and you will reap the many benefits of having mindfulness as a weapon or as a tool in your day-to-day life, which will help you guide you throughout life. So with that, I would like to wish you all a happy and mindful week ahead, and we will meet next sorry, I had the video off by mistake, sorry about that. And I would like to wish you all a happy and mindful week ahead, and we will see we will meet you again same time on next Saturday at for another session, the 106th session on mindfulness for beginners in the English medium. Okay, see you then. I will end this session. Thank you.